Welcome to the CEC report. It's June 29th and I'm Robert Barwick and I'm joined again by CEC leader Craig Isherwood. Welcome, Craig.
Yeah, thanks, Robbie.
In this week's CEC report, Europe financial crisis is no longer about money, it's about sovereignty. Oust Obama or get war. And finally, boat people drown in politicians' crocodile tears. First, the Europe crisis is no longer about money, it's about sovereignty. As we speak, Craig, the leaders of the various EU member nations are filing into a meeting in Brussels, and on the agenda is the biggest bailout of all time this weekend. Now, over the other side of the Atlantic, you've had Ben Bernanke and Timothy Geithner. Ben Bernanke is the Federal Reserve Chairman. Timothy Geithner is Obama's Treasury Secretary. They've been holding secret meetings on Capitol Hill to get the US Congress to agree to a mega bailout.
We're talking $2 trillion, Robbie?
At least they say $2 trillion.
I heard that too, but I think it's tens of trillions of dollars because you're looking at the size of the debt bubble over there is incredible.
Well, what they're doing, Craig, is they're committing to an endless bailout, right? But, and to show you the scale of it, Geithner and Bernanke have already made it clear that they intend to flood Europe anyway with money through the Federal Reserve, but what the Federal Reserve can do, they don't believe will be enough. And that's why they're talking to Congress about being prepared to do a bailout bigger than the TARP bailout in 2008, where the Congress actually puts up real taxpayer
now,
money.
Ben Bernanke actually said that he was quite happy to literally throw money out of helicopters. Is that right?
This is helicopter Ben Bernanke. And,
right.
And it's not a joke.
Well, I thought it was a joke, but then actually you did a class to our leadership here the other day and you were talking about the difference between Keynesian and economics.
Yeah, liberalism.
And liberalism.
He's a Keynesian. And Keynesians actually believe, starting with Keynes himself, Keynes said all that has to happen, the government's role is only to balance the market if there's a fall in demand, and it does that by putting money in. And it doesn't matter how you put money in, and in Keynes' word, he said you can paper with it, dig holes and fill them in again. But Ben Bernanke's version of that was you could just drop money out of helicopters would have the same effect.
And isn't that what one of the Treasury officials said? He was Ken Henry said basically, that's what the intent of the Gillard, the Rudd bailout mentality, but we gave everyone a lot.
Yeah, well, when there was waste from the Rudd stimulus in 2009, a lot of money was wasted, and everyone was wringing their hands over it. The Treasury Secretary Ken Henry said, from an economic standpoint, the waste did not matter. There was no worry about it at all, as long as money was just flooding out. This is a monetarist view of the world, right? And they want to, of course, it doesn't work, or else we wouldn't be in this mess. But now they want to stick with that system and do this in Europe. So Bernanke and Geithner are conspiring to bankrupt America to prop up the European crisis, and the EU is having this meeting to agree to it now. You think, okay, what is the EU? What do they have to agree to? Well, what they have to agree to is the end of sovereignty. Now, LaRouche has issued a pretty hard-hitting statement this week, Lyndon LaRouche, where he said a couple of things. One, he said that what Bernanke and Geithner are doing is tantamount to treason, because of course America should not be playing any role in doing this at all with taxpayers' money. First, second, that if Germany caves in on its sovereignty, that's the end. And LaRouche said the system will probably finish this weekend. So by the time some of you are watching this on Channel 31, it will already be a week later. Look at the explosion that's happened since then. So what's the sovereignty question? Well, the guts of the bailout deal that these EU nations have to agree to is in pretty much all cases in breach of their respective constitutions. And especially Germany, and the viewers would know by now, Craig, that it all comes down to Germany in Europe. Germany's the backstop for everything. For the German government to do what's being demanded, Germany will have to breach its own constitution.
That's basically Germany to actually literally bail out the debts of all these other countries.
And
because it's got the largest economic base, you could say.
And accept things like the implications of the European Stability Mechanism.
Yeah.
For example, they want to issue Europe-wide bonds, right? Now, a Europe-wide bond means that there is an entity called EU, Europe, that is more powerful and more significant than the individual member nations who make it up. And the individual member nations are handing over their sovereignty to that entity in order, because they're the ones who have to back up the bond.
Yeah.
Now, that's one specific that Angela Merkel is resisting because it's a breach of Germany's constitution.
But I think, Robbie, don't put it too high up on the pedestal. The fact is that the people of Germany are starting to react to the bailout mentality themselves, such that, you know, she is resisting because of popular support.
Exactly.
It's not because she's a great economist or a great person, per se. This is purely politics on her behalf. If she started to cave in for this, she'd be gone overnight.
And what I wanted to point out, Craig, is it's lawful that we've reached this. This is the nitty-gritty now. It's lawful we've reached this point. So you've got this question of sovereignty on the table. Why is the principle of sovereignty more important than money?
Because, look, money's being used as a weapon, Robbie. It's always been a weapon of the British Empire. And, look, we write about this in our paper, Defeat the British Empire of Monetarism. Any empire always controls other entities, its people, by the use of money. However, money is an idiot. Money is nothing. Like, if in Australia, God forbid, that all money disappeared tomorrow, does that mean the physical economy would stop working? People stop producing stuff? No. It just means that there's no medium of exchange to actually transfer the value of whatever has been produced or served. So the problem with money is that if the ownership of the money moves out of that of sovereign nation states into the private hands of a private banking cartel, in this particular case, the British Empire.
Multinational one.
Multinational, you know, the issue of sovereignty to them is irrelevant. They want to be able to control populations, and they do it through these monetarist mechanisms. And look, Australia is already dominated by monetarism. We've lost our sovereignty when we lost the actual original Commonwealth Bank. So the issue of sovereignty in the case of Europe was actually first destroyed under Maastricht, and then you had, of course, the bringing of the euro at that time, where sovereign nations lost their individual currencies. They lost the ability to control their internal money, that is their currency, and consequently at that point they lost their sovereignty. But even now, the intention of the European Stability Fund, these bureaucrats, a lot of them are unelected, they're simply tools of the British Empire, the inter-alpha banking system that we talk a lot about in our publications. The issue here is to destroy the idea of any resistance to the British Empire.
And there are some examples that we can cite, Craig, of how even Australia, in monetary terms, has lost a lot of its sovereignty. And just a few is when governments have to balance their budgets and inflict all kinds of pain on the population in order to keep things like a AAA credit rating. That means they're trying to appeal to some international credit rating agencies to have a score at which our money can be valued at, basically, and the welfare of the people comes second.
I mean, that's a classic example, because Julia Gillard came out a couple of weeks ago now and says we're going to find $58 billion to buy create a bunch of old tubs called submarines. Yet if we were to have $5 or $6 billion put into the health system right now, then we could transform the waiting list situation. The physical well-being of our people could be uplifted. But there's no intention to do that. Why? It's because the ideology driving behind this is what I've said many times on this program, is the intention of population reduction. And that's the intention of the British Empire. The monetarist policies, the ideas of protecting sovereignty, losing sovereignty, is all part of reducing the world's population.
Yeah, so when you hand over your sovereignty in the form of control of your money to another institution,
you're handing over control of your people.
That's right. You as the government are giving up any ability to do what you're there for, which is to support the welfare of your people.
Which is how people should measure the people that they put in and vote into parliament in this country.
So that's what's at stake right now in Europe. And as I said, these meetings are happening now. The EU meeting is today, their time, Friday. And then the German parliament, I believe, is having a vote at the same time. And we'll see what happens as of Saturday and onwards from that. So stay tuned for more on that. All right. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the war danger and the importance of getting rid of Obama. Welcome back to the CEC report. So, oust Obama or get world war. There are two events that have happened this week that I wanted to show how they're related. One, US President Barack Obama claimed executive privilege to avoid handing over documents to a congressional inquiry on a program called Fast and Furious. I'll elaborate that in a minute. Also this week, the country of Turkey very publicly and dramatically changed its rules of engagements vis-a-vis Syria. And they did that in response to the Turkish aircraft, military aircraft, getting shot down in Syrian airspace, right? So how are they related? Well, what Turkey is doing is a very provocative next step in the drive to use Syria to get a war. And, of course, not to get a war on Syria, but to get a showdown between the West and Russia specifically. As we've highlighted here many times, Syria is a proxy for a larger war, but they're determined to get it. And you cannot separate this also from what we talked about before the break, which is the timing of what's happening in Europe now. There are people in positions of government right around the world who would be consciously thinking that this financial crisis is such a mess, the only way to clean it up would be to go to war. That's it. There's a mentality there that's very strong.
And dictatorship, inside countries. And that's very much why we're talking about this ousting of Obama. Because, look, the guy has a narcissistic personality disorder. He basically thinks he's the next best thing next to God. And anything that questions him, or anyone that questions him, he basically targets for elimination. And you can understand why, you know, he uses these drones and so forth to kill people, because it's part and parcel of how he thinks about things. So he's been put in the spotlight this week by this Fast and Furious, which is really showing up for everyone, everything that Lynn LaRouche said about the psychological nature of Obama.
In case people don't know the details of this, this is one of the most bizarre government programs you can imagine. In fact, it's so bizarre, it can't be. And just to explain that, the U.S. Department of Alcohol, Tobacco and Firearms, which is associated with the FBI and comes under the Attorney General's Department, was running a supposed sting operation of sorts where they were trying to catch Mexican drug cartels. Now, Craig, these are the most brutal killers in the world. These are the ones that you unfortunately, tragically, way too regularly see on the news as having murdered 50 people at a time, often decapitating them, putting them in public places to send a message to other people in Mexico. This is the lawless people that run Mexico at the moment, right? The worst drug cartels who've ever existed. And what the US government claimed they were doing is, in order to try and track them down and catch them, is they were smuggling to them advanced weapons, you know, the assault weapons, semi-automatic rifles and all this kind of stuff. Very, very dangerous weapons. At least 2,000 of them were being funneled into these Mexican cartels, drug cartels, with the excuse that they were going to track the weapons and then be able to arrest both the provider and the drug cartel representatives. And the tracking devices failed, etc. One of the excuses was, oh, well, the batteries went flat on these things. The batteries last for a couple of hours. It takes a couple of weeks to do this operation. All the excuses are so flimsy, it's ridiculous. It became an issue when a U.S. Border Patrolman was murdered with one of these U.S. government-provided weapons by a cartel person.
They lost. How many did they lose?
Thousands. I think they've only got 700 of the 2,000 back. Now, it's bizarre. And like I said, it's so bizarre. It really brings you in mind of other scandals that the US government in the past has been involved in, like Iran-Contra, etc., where there was a deliberate component to this. But we'll put that aside now. The more interesting thing is, when this first came to light, Barack Obama and his Attorney General, Eric Holder, denied any knowledge. There's been a congressional inquiry, and as that inquiry's got deeper and deeper and deeper, the denials were still thick and fast, and they were denials under oath. But then when the Congress demanded certain documents, in order to refuse to hand over those documents, Obama claimed executive privilege. Now, it's his right as president. He's the executive. He can do that. He say, no, I cannot let you have that information because it's central to the internal runnings of my office. But that can only be true if he knew about this program, which up until now he has denied. Now, this is not a lightweight thing. This is a very, very serious program, and it's seriously criminal. potentially criminal, and as people are comparing it to his Watergate. Now, this is, as you just alluded to, this is the latest in a series of predicates that this guy has shown himself up, and it's the most serious. For 3 years now, LaRouche has been demanding that Democrats get together and get rid of this guy, impeach him and oust him. He has renewed that demand now, Craig, but he's demanding the Democrats do it before the Democratic Convention. Why is that?
Because he's such a danger, Robbie, in terms of promoting this war with Syria, i.e. against Russia and China. And look, we go through this in great detail in our last paper, you know, British Crown's Endgame, Financial Crash and Nuclear War. We show how the US is encircling Russia and China with a build-up militarily, and we're sitting right in the middle of this. Actually, we've got targets on our foreheads, things like Pine Gap, because we're actively facilitating the build-up militarily, which is seen by China to be somewhat aggressive.
Now,
somewhat, that's an exaggeration, right? Very aggressive. And, you know, we have various military or ex-military layers in this country that have come out and spoken about this is an insane policy. Here we have, you know, China, which doesn't have an aggressive expansion military policy, and we're basically treating it as though it does. Now, the point is, they come back to what we were talking about before with the collapse of the financial and monetary system. The British Empire and its system of monetarism is going down the toilet extremely fast. You have a collaboration between Russia, China and India towards sovereignty, towards the development internally of their economies. So they're actually expanding. They're actually going into great infrastructure projects, and they're doing what is actually required to support their populations. And what the British fear is, with the collapse of the transatlantic system, you know, centred particularly on the US, but also into Europe, particularly in Europe at the moment, that this system will disintegrate for them, and China and Russia will be basically left holding the actual global political power.
Superiority
in very many different ways. So the issue for the British, for the British Crown, is we're not going to let that happen at any point. We'd rather foment war. And the major tool for that is Barack Obama.
Yeah, they can't do it themselves. They need him with their finger.
Get rid of him. You take the finger off the nuclear button, you completely break the whole operation towards pushing for World War III.
And in case people are wondering, LaRouche has also made the point that Romney would be no better than Obama. And it's one of the reasons he's saying do this before the Democratic Convention. Replace Obama before the election with someone who can be better than both of them. In our paper, Craig, that you referenced, we talk about how, in terms of the financial component of that's driving this, Obama could have replaced Bush and been a real fixer of the financial system. And the article we have in there is Americans voted for Roosevelt but got Hitler.
That one.
And that goes through the predicates of exactly what the crimes Obama has committed while he's been in office. And this Fast and Furious is the latest one. But this is the one glimmer of hope. Now, we're sort of running out of time, but one other predicate that's just for, because it's an internal domestic one, but it's useful to know. A lot of congressmen, Democratic congressmen, are bailing out of going to the Democratic Convention this year because they don't want to be seen dead with him.
Mm. Now, the hatred for Obama is unbelievable.
Australians need to take this on board because we get this, there's still this worship of Obama. We all think he's wonderful because that's the message we get, and we haven't experienced what Americans have experienced. Well, that's how bad it is in America. His fellow Democrats don't want to be seen with him. So then there is a chance, therefore, that what LaRouche is calling for can be...
Just to also, Robbie, Keisha Rogers, LaRouche's Democratic candidate for
Texas,
actually won the Democratic nomination. And that was despite the fact that he had a young African-American woman who was accused of being a member of the Ku Klux Klan and all sorts of insane things. So, I mean, this is really beginning to heat up a bit.
And her platform was the impeachment of Obama.
Exactly.
All right, we have run out of time there. When we come back, we're going to talk about the boat people crisis. Welcome back to the CEC Report. Finally, it has to be said, boat people are drowning in the politicians' crocodile tears. We've had sickening scenes in Parliament this week, Craig, because what you've seen is moral pygmies. And I take that word from Charles Harper, the great Australian poet. Moral pygmies of both major parties stepping all over each other in order to seize the moral high ground on what's happening to refugees. All their rhetoric is just that. It's rhetoric and it's rubbish. They are now claiming that they're motivated by a desire to stop them from drowning. That was never the motivation behind refugee policy. Never. We have had one of the most brutal refugee regimes in the world, mainly beginning with the Tampa, but actually going before that. It was Paul Keating's government that started the compulsory detention of refugees, mm-hmm. right, back in the early 90s, the Labor
government.
In
the 70s, we had a lot of Vietnam refugees under Fraser from the Vietnam War, and they were accommodated as...
Look at them now.
Yeah. Right? They're part and parcel of the fabric of our society. Yeah.
But this started then, had its roots in Keating, and it really took off with the Tampa. And what was the issue of the Tampa? Those people stuck on that boat, they were not... We weren't worried about them drowning, right? John Howard said, we will choose who comes to this country in the circumstances in which they come. He used it to win an election, and it was in the context of 9/11 and whipping up hysteria about Muslims. And that happened long before any drowning. Now, it also has to be said that with the drownings, there are too many unanswered questions about them. Mm. And there's so many unanswered questions, you cannot rule out that government policy plays a direct role. Now, you can't say more than that because we don't have any evidence, but questions have been asked ever since the original CivEx catastrophe where over 200, I think something like 300 people drowned in late 2001. Both parties are fascist when it comes to this because they've based a policy on deterrent. And deterrent means you stop people doing something out of fear of what's happening to other people. And that was the locking up by razor wire, behind razor wire. All the horror stories that have come out over all those years, that fed the policy into the policy deterrent. That was good for government policy, Craig, because that's what they wanted, feedback to go back to the other side of the world where these refugees were coming from. And if the deterrent was ever going to work, isn't mass drownings the ultimate deterrent?
Well,
yeah, the boats are still coming. So we need some truth. And we need some humanity on this. And Craig, I wanted you to have a comment on it. Aside from Australians snapping out of their delusion that Australia is overpopulated, which would help to get some balance on the subject, what more can be done to save refugees?
Cut the racism at the underlying weakness of everything is the ability of Australian politicians to play the racist card. That's what this is about. It's got nothing to do with overpopulation. It's to win elections, as you indicated with John Howard. Australia has only 23 million people, close to. If we had the same population density per square kilometre as Tasmania, Robbie, we could have 55 million people. That's with all the rainforests and all the reserves down there in Tasmania.
That's with half of it locked up.
With half of it locked up.
Population density.
You know, we can put people to work. We need tons more people if we really had a real economic development project. Large projects like the Ring Rail proposal around Australia for high-speed rail, the development of better highways and so forth, you know, the rebuilding of rural communities. We should be opening our arms and saying, come and help us do this, participate in rebuilding our country. We want you and your family and your family's kids to participate in the future of our country.
So if we change the way we operate internally, we would actually welcome them.
We would. But not if you don't recognise this racist current. Goes back to the old White Australia policy. It's very ingrained in our country, and it makes me sick to the stomach that we have to keep coming back to this and watch all these crocodile tears in the Parliament.
The CSC has commented on this in the past. You can get it off our website. But we have run out of time, so thanks for that, Craig. And thanks for tuning in. Stay tuned for more, which will come to you next week.